Hey everyone, it's me, Eric here, and today, welcome back to the podcast, and we will explore the war crimes that have been documented during the Russo-Ukrainian War that began in February 2022, and we will examine the different types of war crimes, the devastating impact they have on civilians, and the ongoing efforts to hold those responsible accountable. One thing to note before we move into the episode is that these war crimes, these acts, are not simply regrettable consequences of war. They're not just accidents. Most often to always, they are purposeful crimes that hold individuals accountable, and already we see a number of devastating consequences in the invasion. Now, before we actually talk about the war crimes that are happening in Ukraine, we need to define war crimes. Now, generally, war crimes target civilians or disregard basic human decency during times of armed conflict, and the Rome Statute plays an important role in this. Now, the Rome Statute states that a war crime can be considered a war crime if it has serious breaches of the 1949 Geneva Conventions, or if it seriously violates the laws and customs applicable in international armed conflicts. Talk about war crime, it's not just about the definitions, the types, the varieties. We really need to drill deep in to see what makes up a war crime, not just a surface definition. The UN states that war crimes are made from two elements, a contextual and a mental element. Now, the contextual element is that the conduct took place in the context of and was associated with an international or non-international armed conflict, and the mental element is the intent and knowledge both with regards to the individual act and the contextual element. Now, in contrast to genocide, which is specific targeting against a racial, ethnic, national, or religious group, or such, and crimes against humanity, which is widespread systematic attacks towards any civilian population, war crimes are significantly broader. War crimes can be committed against a diversity of victims, especially individuals fighting, engaging in combat, or not, to be honest. Now, the Geneva Conventions are widely known, and when we refer to the Geneva Convention, we oftentimes just mean the Fourth Convention, signed in 1949 following the Second World War, but the first three are equally important. There are also three additional protocols that are often disregarded. Now, however, 1949 is the date to focus on, because it is when all four conventions were last revised and adopted. Now, these conventions are fundamental to defining and shaping war crimes for several key reasons, with the main factor being that the conventions establish standards. Before the Geneva Conventions, oftentimes the laws of war were unagreed on, vague and inconsistently applied, perhaps bending towards the powerful and victorious. Additionally, many of the laws of war were based on custom and tradition. However, the conventions created a clear and codified set of rules outlining what constitutes acceptable conduct during armed conflict, especially focusing on protecting vulnerable groups such as women, children, and civilians, which has been universally recognized. Additionally, the conventions provide a concrete foundation for investigating and prosecuting war crimes. Evidence of violations against the established standards outlined in the conventions can be used to build legal cases against the perpetrators. Furthermore, the conventions are based on three main principles that oftentimes are what war crimes strike a stark dichotomy against. These principles are humanity, neutrality, and impartiality. Humanity means that we should treat everyone humanely, regardless of the side in the war. Neutrality means that aid is provided based on medical need, not nationality. And impartiality means avoid favoring one side over another in a conflict. Now, zooming into the Russo-Ukrainian conflict, on February 24, 2022, Russia launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which is a major escalation for an ongoing conflict that actually began in 2014. Since the beginning of the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the Russian military and authorities have committed war crimes, such as deliberate attacks against civilian targets, including strikes on hospitals on the energy grid, and indiscriminate attacks on densely populated areas, including with cluster bombs. Now, additionally, there are also acts of abduction, torture, murder of civilians, forced deportation, sexual violence, and destruction of cultural heritage, and mistreatment, torture, and murder of Ukrainian prisoners of war. Now, this is a long list. Since the invasion in 2022, there has been a growing body of evidence from credible sources which paint a disturbing picture of war crimes which are being committed, and these include the BBC, the New York Times, Amnesty International, and many more, all helping to build a strong case against the perpetrators. Now, when we look at war crimes, we must look at the investigation processes and what's actually happening to what's actually being done about it. Now, one thing we need to know is the witness testimonies, and these are present. Now, the survivors of attacks, medical personnel treating the wounded, and journalists on the ground have provided first-hand accounts of these atrocities. These accounts detail deliberate attacks on civilians, indiscriminate shelling, torture, and other war crimes. Additionally, photographic and video evidence is crucial in prosecuting and the investigation stage. Graphic images and videos have emerged from Ukraine, capturing the destruction of civilian infrastructure and the suffering of victims. This visual evidence provides undeniable proof of war crimes being committed. Finally, we have to look at the investigations which are being done by United Nations Human Rights Office, the Human Rights Watch, and the Amnesty International. And these are conducting independent investigations into war crimes in Ukraine, and these organizations interview witnesses, gather evidence, and publish reports documenting the findings. Now, to go into a bit more detail about the war crimes, we need to really define what these are. When we talk about attacks on civilians, what exactly is that? Well, this includes the shelling of apartment buildings, hospitals, schools, and evacuation corridors. Additionally, when you talk about this indiscriminate shelling, it means the use of weapons like cluster munitions and barrel bombs in populated areas. Furthermore, we move on to these extrajudicial killings, meaning the executions of civilians without trial. Torture and ill-treatment of prisoner of war means physical and psychological abuse of captured Ukrainian soldiers, and sexual violence, which is a significant war crime, includes rape and other forms of sexual violence against Ukrainian civilians. Now, when we talk about these types, these varieties, these numerous war crimes being committed, we need to talk about and address these impacts. And I think there are two main factors, there are two main types, the social impacts and the economic impacts. Now, a really stark and significant social impact is the mass displacement, the humanitarian crisis. And the UN Refugee Agency reports over 40 million Ukrainians have fled their homes since the war began, with a staggering 6.6 million displaced internally. This mass displacement creates a humanitarian crisis, straining resources in receiving areas and leaving millions struggling to access basic necessities like food, water, and shelter. Another one of these social impacts includes psychological trauma and long-term health effects, and witnessing violence, destruction, and the loss of loved ones has a severe psychological impact on civilians. A study by the World Health Organization found that mental health needs in Ukraine have nearly doubled since the war's start, and this translates to millions of needs in mental health services with long-term consequences for individuals and society. A final major social impact of the war crimes in Ukraine include the erosion of social cohesion and increased risk of violence. War crimes targeting civilians and the destruction of infrastructure can tear the social fabric of communities. A report by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe documents the rising tensions and violence within some Ukrainian communities. And this breakdown of trust and social norms can lead to further violence and instability in the long run. However, we can't neglect the economic impacts of the war crimes in Ukraine, and one major one is the devastation of infrastructure and economic activity. Now, the deliberate targeting of civilian infrastructure like factories, power plants, and transportation networks has crippled the Ukrainian economy. The War Bank estimates that the war's economic damage to Ukraine at $350 billion United States dollars by June 2023, and this widespread destruction will take years to rebuild, hindering economic growth and recovery. The global food security crisis is also a major economic impact of war crimes in Ukraine, as Ukraine is a major exporter of wheat, corn, and sunflower oil. The war has disrupted agricultural production exports, leading to a global food security crisis. Now, the Food and Agricultural Organization, the FAO, estimates global food prices could rise by up to 20% due to the war, and this rise in food prices disproportionately impacts low-income countries and populations, pushing millions towards hunger. This means these economic impacts are not just located in Ukraine, they exist globally. Finally, another major economic impact is the displacement and loss of labor force. The mass displacement of millions of Ukrainians has significantly impacted the country's workforce, and this not only reduces the labor available for essential services and production, but also deprives the country, the economy, of skills and experience. The Kyiv School of Economics estimates a 40% decrease in Ukraine's labor force due to the war. Now, when you talk about prosecuting these war crimes and holding people accountable for all these economic, social impacts and the negative impacts on civilians, we need to see what are the actual systems and organizations would play a role in prosecution. Now, the International Criminal Court, the ICC, is extremely important in prosecuting war crimes, often since national courts are willing or unable to do the prosecution investigation themselves. The ICC has a focus on individual accountability, as the ICC holds individuals criminally responsible, not entire countries. This can be seen as arrest warrants have been issued for Vladimir Putin, President of the Russian Federation, Maria Lvova-Belova, Presidential Commissioner for Children's Rights in Russia, and two high-ranking military officials, Viktor Sokolov and Sergei Kobylash, for having committed war crimes. Since neither Ukraine nor Russia are actually state parties to the Rome Statute, the treaty that established the ICC, this means the ICC cannot initiate investigations based solely on its jurisdiction. However, 41 states have referred the conflict in Ukraine to the ICC, and preliminary examinations have provided a reasonable basis for investigation, and that's what's going on now. However, many challenges lie along the way of gathering evidence, and especially since investigating war crimes in an active conflict zone poses significant danger and challenges, and verifying evidence is hard. Furthermore, the ICC needs to rely on cooperation from states to arrest and surrender suspects, which can be complicated by political considerations. Finally, the lengthy process is also an issue, as ICC investigations and prosecutions can take years, and there is no guarantee of these convictions. However, Ukraine itself is not putting in efforts, but Ukraine is trying. Ukraine is putting in efforts, and the government is actively collecting evidence of war crimes committed by Russian forces. Additionally, Ukraine is also collaborating with international legal teams from the EU, the USA, and also groups like Task Force on Accountability for Crimes Committed in Ukraine. All these international legal teams are supporting Ukraine in this. However, you might not have expected this, where Russia is actually also charging hundreds of Ukrainians with war crimes. This shows that war crimes can be committed by both parties, and it never is really clear who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. So, that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for the next one, and see you next time.